to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and during this broadcast, we invite you to interact with us on our chat. That's on emotionalpro.com or the blogtalkradio.com/FPL for Full Power Living page. You can also call us on our toll-free number, 800-630-7858. 800-630-7858. One of the men with whom I've lived intimately in my life had a father who was a milquetoast. He allowed his wife to interact in a very mean way with him, was a business failure, and lived and then concluded his life as a drunk. Off my man went to a men's group, where he told me he was learning how to be a man. It had never occurred to me as a woman that one had to learn to be a man, nor had I realized, as I do now, what a challenging job that can be in our society. After all, what is important in manhood? Is it being successful in making money, maintaining access to your emotions, being an ideal partner, or spending time with the kids? And how do you find out? Men, I've also learned, have been encouraged to keep things locked inside so they look good on the outside and are not so vulnerable to attack. What those men were wrestling with in that men's group long ago remained mostly a mystery to me until I read the book of today's guest. For 20 years, author and speaker Ken Solon has worked with men to move them beyond the issues that affect their relationships and limit their lives. His insights into trust and intimacy, sex and sexuality, fatherhood and friendship, and marriage and divorce have earned him a loyal following by both men and women. His book is entitled Act Like a Man. Really, there's hope. Men can change. He's a regular contributor about this subject to the Huffington Post, and you can find him on the web at www.kensolin, that's kensolin.com. So, Ken, welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you. Nice to be here, and that was a very sweet introduction.
Thank you. Well, I enjoyed the very interesting, the way you do lay out what you have to offer in your book, Act Like a Man. You created a group with men in it and followed the development of that group over time. And it makes the issues very interesting and very easy to look at, too. And you got started with your own involvement with men's group after you went to a Robert Bly event where Robert Bly was not, when he wasn't there. So
right. Sort of odd.
Yeah.
But he didn't need to be there, actually. You know, I'd read his book, Iron John. It was a good book. But it's the story of the rites of passage. A young boy, you know, the young man who grows up and wants to leave home and wants the princess and has to slay the dragon. It's, you know, it's the usual mythology, but the fact that he wasn't there really wasn't critical to me. What really mattered was there were 700 other guys there, none of whom had any more idea about manhood than I did. And that became real clear when we started to talk together. My work is, I talk about men becoming empowered. And to me, what that means is men becoming aware of what their emotions are in the moment and then in control as well. You know, there's nothing wrong with being angry. You know, the notion of angry men being a bad thing, it's only because men who are angry generally take it out on people. But, you know, anger by itself isn't necessarily bad. But men need to learn how to control themselves. But first they need to know what those feelings are. In relationships, women often say, look, here's how I'm feeling about where we are in our relationship, and maybe she says how she's feeling, and what about you? And the first two words out of his mouth are, I think. Well, mm-hmm. You know, if somebody asks you how you feel, you can't tell them what you think. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. I think, I feel conversation just go round and round and round. So what we learned, what we taught each other over the years in my group, was how to speak from our hearts, how to talk about our feelings. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of fear amongst men about expressing their feelings, and I think that's mostly because they're not comfortably in control of them. They have feelings and they get anxious, and instead of being in control, they just fall apart or get out of control. And women want a deeper dialogue. And, mm-hmm. and men need it for each other, too. Friendships between men require some emotional honesty. And absent emotional honesty, I don't know how men can have friendships either.
It's very interesting to hear that, because recently I've been conducting interviews that would suggest to me that women don't feel empowered either. So, you know, it's almost like it's a cultural thing that we could call it empowerment. We could also call it authenticity, I think, that we've lost
yeah.
track of who we really are. And that's before we can interact with other people, we need to know who we really are.
Yeah, I think the lessons for young men were lost when the Industrial Revolution started and fathers went off to work in the factories, and that was the end of, they used to take their boys out in the field with them or into their trade with them and talk to them all day. It taught them how to make a living, how to support their families, you know, what all that meant. And then when they went off into the factories, that was it. It was over. I think women, maybe young women, may be suffering similarly because their mothers are gone. They're out working now. They're not home all day either. So I think women are kind of maybe getting to the place where men were relegated to 150 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and that's to be pretty much on their own. And so I suspect that at some point women's groups, which were very popular for decades, I suspect there'll be a comeback.
Yeah, no doubt. I did think a lot. In my early childhood, I had the opportunity to spend a year and then several summers on my grandparents' farm. And that was pre-industrial revolution living, where the children spent all day with the adults, whether you were helping your uncle and your grandfather, you're helping your grandmother and your mother, or whoever, you got to hang out with adults.
Yeah.
And learning how to do whatever adults did. And I really, in reading your book, I really thought about how much that is gone from our society. It left me like, just say in terms of cooking, I don't have any question of whether I can cook or not. I started cooking when I was little, you know,
mm-hmm.
and kids don't do that now. We have to have pre-cut pineapple and lettuce.
Yeah. I was watching it. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was watching a movie last night that I'd never seen. It's been out for a while, called Avalon. And it was about an immigrant family who came here in 1914, and how tight the family was, how they helped each other. They had family meetings, and I'm talking about extended families with, you know, brothers, uncles, cousins, and they had meetings. They took care of each other. And as the generations progressed, by the time two generations was all it took to kill that whole thing off, and everybody was on his own. There was no more connection because people didn't need each other to survive anymore, because they were already here. They weren't immigrating anymore. They were here. They were settled. As soon as all the dangers of life were removed, in terms of, you know, making a living and that sort of thing, they didn't need each other anymore. And by the end of the movie, there was no connection with anyone anymore. And,
wow.
And I think that I thought it was really interesting because it does speak to our culture now. People move. They don't know anybody. Most people don't know their neighbors. There's no sense of community anymore in most cases, and that's true for families too. So, I get a lot of emails from people who read my articles, and I wrote an article, the title was Divorcing an Old Friend. It got almost 1,200 comments on
wow.
Huffington Post. Yeah, it was huge. And the article was about I had to leave an old friend behind because, you know, he just couldn't follow me into where I was going, and he insisted that my talk about men and friendship and was all of this was boring, and he was very shut down and chose to stay that way. So I had to kind of let him go because he kept sticking it to me all the time. It became painful. He wasn't really behaving like a friend. And I realized that even amongst friends sometimes, you know, the sense that there's some growth, somebody goes through some emotional growth, and if somebody hasn't, that becomes uncomfortable for the person who hasn't. And it becomes painful to be in a relationship with that person, both ways. You know, the person who's sort of left behind is uncomfortable because he's not in the place where I was, and I became uncomfortable. So I think it's important for men, in particular, my topic is men, to form groups, to form friendships that are really meaningful, but also very supportive of growth and change. Over 20 years, my group, I mean, my God, I've seen so much. I've seen near miraculous change in divorces, marriages, remarriages, death, unemployment, you name it, and we've been through it. And the support, the unconditional support, is so important because we don't have families anymore. What we have is each other, our peers. And I think, I get letters from guys all the time or emails. Do I know any groups in Schenectady or Dallas or Pennsylvania? And I don't. There's no National Registry of Men's Groups, at least not yet. So I tell them, start your own group and go on my website, kensolin.com. There's a whole tab that'll tell you how to start your own group. And if you really want to know what it looks like, read my book, Act Like a Man. That's a real men's group. It's real dialogue. If you follow along, you know, the story of these guys, it's pretty hard to miss the point. But I think that's what, you know, that's the cave that men need to find these days to get some comfort.
That's a really good point. Well, one of the things, I used to teach a course on gender communication and read a lot of Deborah Tannen, who has done, as you know, the baseline research on gender issues. And she suggests, of course, that boys play king of the mountain with each other, that they're supposed to be on top. And in the early days of the group that you report and Act Like a Man, it seemed like that issue of who's on top, who's the best, who can be the least vulnerable, led to sort of some explosive outbursts and made it really hard to get close. What did it take to get past that?
Yeah, I think in the beginning, the first thing that has to go when a group gets started are the egos, you know, because if you don't leave your ego at the door, then you spend the whole conversation is defending yourself. That isn't necessary. You know, we're not, we learned in time, it didn't take that long, but we did learn in time that it was support we needed to give each other, not criticism, not judgment, not our opinions. If somebody's going through a divorce, there's a couple choices they have, and they can go to an individual therapist who will tell them to, you know, get in touch with your feelings, and it'll go on and on. In a men's group, you can talk about how you're feeling in a divorce and get feedback from other guys who've been in your situation who will tell you what their experience was on an emotional level. They'll tell you what they did that worked, what didn't work. You know, I dated a lot. I had sex with as many women as I could. And in the end, I was worse off than I was when I after my divorce. And there's great lessons that men can teach each other. That's the point of the men's group, is to share those experiences. You know, if you have eight 40-year-old guys in a group, you've got over 300 years of life experience to share. That's pretty rich.
Yeah, certainly is. Certainly is. Well, what does it mean overall to act like a man? What have you come up with? What is acting like a man?
I think it's, for me and for the guys and over the years of my group, we've learned it's to be open-hearted and to live in integrity, which means to be who you are, to be your authentic self. And forget about what people you think people want you to be or you should be. You need to be who you are, and that's your authentic self. And if you're living in integrity with everyone around you, you're open, you're honest, and you don't have to play any games. This is who I am. I feel real good about where I am. You know, am I going to continue to grow, do some work? Yeah, probably I will. But this is who I am, and I'm proud of who I am, and I feel comfortable being this guy. That's important because very few men feel secure in who they are. You know, there's just a lot of insecurities, and that's mostly because they don't talk to anyone, not on a deeper level anyway. And it's guys who don't have friends. I mean, real friends. It's like living in a vacuum. Nothing lives in a vacuum. And if you're a lone wolf, and I know about this because I was a lone wolf into my early 40s, you're living in a vacuum. You're second guessing every decision you make. Agonizing about things that happen to you because you have no one to share them with, to say, look, I'm feeling terrible because, you know, whatever happened. And then you get some feedback from guys. If you don't have that, man, you really are alone in the world, and that's not a good way to go.
Yeah, it's difficult. I remember when my son, I was a single parent for 20 years, when my son was about 9, we were driving on a rainy day in our little town of Fairfax in Marin County, and there were 3 boys, about 12, riding their bikes, and one of them slipped and turned over his bike and hurt himself, and the other 2 boys laughed. And my son saw this, and he asked me, why are they laughing? And we ended up having a discussion about the fact that our culture teaches boys not to acknowledge how they're feeling, but to act like a man. And I told him I'd been raising him in such a way as to stay in contact with his emotions, but that he might at some point need to make a decision about whether he was going to be more like the other boys or he was going to stay in contact with his feelings. And he decided on the spot to stay in contact with his feelings, and he's in his mid-30s now and is still in contact with his feelings. But in reading your book, I was thinking about that. It's like one of the reasons you end up getting to be a lone wolf is you're not supposed to share with somebody your pain.
No, in fact, that is where I got the title for the book, Act Like a Man, was, you know, when I was a kid and got hurt, you know, maybe laying in the street bleeding. Somebody surely say, well, come on, suck it up, act like a man. You know, be a man. And I sucked it up into my 40s. Mm. And all of a sudden I realized that, you know, something was wrong. I didn't have any friends who I could trust. I didn't know what my feelings were about. I was an angry guy. I had a pretty violent boyhood, which it made me angry. And the fallout from that, because I never really talked about it, the fallout was that I was just this raging, angry lunatic, and who wants to be around somebody like that? Well, other men surely didn't, and women got tired of it after a while, too. So I remember the first meeting we had 20 years ago, the very first men's group meeting. None of us had ever done any of that work before, and somebody suggested, well, you know, why don't we talk about our fathers? And because I'd called the meeting, somebody said, what about your father? And, you know, I had this this river just washed over me, and I hadn't thought about it in 25 years and or maybe more. And I just fell apart. I just broke down and cried, and all the pain from that terrible boyhood experience came back, and I started talking about it. And we all talked about our boyhoods, and in time, we didn't have to talk about them anymore. But it took a while. There were 8 guys, and we had a lot of other issues to cover. But it took us a couple of years before everybody finally got everything out that they wanted to talk about. And what I found was, and you know, we were regular guys. In my group, there were guys with high school diplomas and guys with postgraduate degrees. So it was a real a mixed bag of men. And what we found is that the experiences of the guys in the group were, if you were lucky, it was benign neglect. And if you weren't so lucky, it was violence. Mm-hmm. And I was not the only guy who experienced violence. There were a couple other guys, several other guys. So, you know, one of the things I write about from time to time is fatherhood. I raised my son as a baby from a 1-year-old to 6 by myself. Mm-hmm. And I encourage men to be very, very involved with their kids, and especially after a divorce. And one of the frustrations I hear from men is that the courts don't give them much custody. They don't have much of the percentage of the time. And that's one of the few places I think men really need to go to war, is to get the courts to stop doing this to them in terms of being fathers. I think the courts discourage men from wanting to be involved fathers by limiting, seriously limiting the amount of time they can spend. And, you know, I hear from, I'm sorry.
Well, I agree with you on that, and I also want to emphasize what a loss that is to the children. It's like exacerbating the problem over generations by taking half of the influence of their lives away from them.
Yeah, I think things have changed so much. I mean, everybody's working now. So there's nobody's at home anymore raising kids. Very few people are at home raising kids. This is 2012. Life has changed. And I think the notion, a few women emailed me and said, well, it's cruel to take a child away from its primary caregiver, its mother. And I say, no, there are no primary caregivers anymore. Everybody's working. And primary caregivers should be an equally shared responsibility. Whether you're married or divorced, it should be an equally shared responsibility. The notion that mothers are better at this than fathers, I don't buy that. You know, I raised a baby, and there was nothing special about me. I was just devoted to being as good a dad as I could be. But I've met a lot of men over the years who've had similar experiences. So I think there's a lot going on in our culture that's shifting the man-woman paradigm, and one of them, I think, is going to have to be child-rearing.
I agree with that. My son, who's now in his mid-30s, his dad, I had a higher-paying job than his dad did at the time he was born, so I went back to work, and my husband stayed home and took care of him. And so I can attest firsthand, my son, if he got hurt or injured or whatever, pulled for his dad more than his mother. The testament is that it's who cares for you that you go for, not a gender. And
exactly.
Eventually his dad moved out of his life over time, and I'm here to tell you that I have a really close relationship with my son, so it didn't rob me of anything either.
Right.
And so I appreciate those points that you're bringing up. I think people get scared, or they feel they judge the other person and think you can't do a good job. You know, anybody who's caring and loving and conscious can do a good job of raising a child, I think. And I agree with you with your comments.
Too. Yeah. Thank you. I think a lot of guys want to be more involved, and I think they just get discouraged. If not by the courts, they get discouraged because, you know, if you only see your child or your children, you know, every other weekend and one night during the week, you know, you become the good time Charlie.
Right.
Because, you know, you don't see them enough to really teach them any of the life's lessons you'd like to teach them. So, you know, a lot of women are holding on tight to custody and for whatever reasons. And I understand, but I think there's going to have to be some more parity here.
In all fairness to some of the women, too, at least I've seen this in myself and other people, I attempted to get both the fathers of my two children involved, and I had to really push for it. And I don't know if they just accepted thinking that they weren't going to get it or what, but I thought it was really important for them. And the other part, I think, is that since we don't raise our boys and men to be child rearers in the same way that we do girls, it's clear to us women that men don't do as good a job as we do, especially in the early years. And so what I've seen is that we tend to push in and take over, saying you can't do it right, rather than participating in helping the other person to develop a way of doing it right.
Right. And also doing it a different way doesn't mean it's not right.
Amen.
men are men, and you know they're going to do things differently than women. And I think especially when it comes to young boys, you know, there has to be what I never got from my father, and what a lot of guys don't get from their fathers, is that their fathers weren't trustworthy. Either they didn't live up to their word, anytime they made promises they didn't live up to it, or they abused their kids, or they beat them, or yelled at them. All of those things become, you know, just huge weights that don't allow that boy to trust his father. That's your first lesson with trust, is your father. So, you know, men need to understand how important it is to be trustworthy to their children. My grandson is 7. And when they're together, it's really, it's beautiful. I tell my son he's the father I wish I'd had. But he gives him lots of choices. He doesn't tell him, look, we're going to do this. He gives him choices. He listens to him. He respects him. And what I notice is that my grandson just hangs on him. He just adores my son. He adores his father because he feels that respect, and they actually respect each other and love each other. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to watch, and you know, but it's because he trusts my son that he's always going to do what he says he's going to do. He'll be where he says he's going to be, and I think that's critical. You know, fathers need to be, especially with their sons, but also with their daughters, they need to be trustworthy, and that means keeping your word. That's the beginning of it. There's more, but keeping your word is important.
Is very good. Yes, let's talk a little bit more about trust. I hear in your voice something that I recognize in myself, which is my son is also being loving and supportive and wonderful father to his little daughters, and the real payoff for me is that I've been able to make enough change in my own life to see the generations on an upward spiral instead of a downward spiral. And so I want to congratulate you for that. We're up to our first break. We're talking today with author and speaker Ken Solin, who you can find at kensolin.com, kensolin.com. He's the author of Act Like a Man, and after this message, we'll be talking about relationships and sex and intimacy. You're listening to Full Power Living. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com. Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week on April 5th, Dr. Kirby Surprise is my guest talking about synchronicity. He's going to be telling us how we can use our own amazing abilities to create synchronistic events in our lives. In April, we also have best-selling author Laurel Langemeyer, who's encouraging us to use yes energy. Upcoming guests are listed at the top of our radio show page at emotionalpro.com, and we hope you don't miss a single episode of Full Power Living. We also want to encourage you to talk with us right now. 800-630-7858, the number's listed on the chat, and we have chats going at emotionalpro.com and blogtalkradio.com/FPL. If you miss us live or you want to share, you can either download the archives of the show or you can go to iTunes and subscribe. And we want to thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Today we're talking with Ken Solin. You can find him at kensolin.com. And Ken, I visited your website. You've got a lot of information, interviews, articles, videos about men and relationships. And in your book, also, you talk about how the changes you made allowed you to go from being that lone wolf you were talking about to finding a wonderful woman and involving yourself in a wonderful marriage. So I want to congratulate you on that, number one. And number two, tell us something about your wife, how long you've been married to her, and whether she actually is a fan of men's groups, and if so, why?
You know, it's interesting because our men's group over the years, we ended up spending probably at least 50, 60% of our time talking about relationships because we all want to get it right. The work I did allowed me actually to get married because I finally figured out, you know, what my role in relationships was supposed to be as opposed to what it had been. I met my wife about almost 5 years ago, and it was an instant. We instantly connected with each other. Unfortunately, we both had pretty dismal childhoods and family issues. But when we came together, all the work I'd done in men's groups, she realized immediately that I was somebody she could have a dialogue with that involved some feeling, a dialogue. So if she asked me how I'm feeling, I didn't tell her what I was thinking. That goes a long way in terms of relationships, and she's a huge fan of the work that that I've done and continue to do. In fact, she edited. She was a book editor for 25 years for Houghton Mifflin, and decided a couple of years ago to become a birth doula. And I didn't even know what that was. Yeah, she came home one day and said, "I want to be a birth doula." And I said, "That's great. What is it?" And she threw herself into it, and she's become hugely successful at it and very good at it. And I read her Yelp reviews, and it seems like she's as good as it gets. But we've supported each other. She edited my book. She edits the articles I write for Huffington Post. I've always supported her in her career. I supported her in her family issues. We know how to support each other. We don't give each other advice. We wait until somebody, one of us, asks, "What do you think?" You know, we don't offer it right away. And I guess the big lesson for most men is that women often want to talk about what's going on in their lives, but they're not looking for you to fix it. And men are fixers, and that becomes a problem because as soon as a woman tells her story, and all she wanted to do was to tell her story because to see how it feels when she tells it, when a guy starts trying to fix it, that negates the whole purpose of telling the story in the first place. So for a lot of men, learn it to hang back, hold back, don't fix it, just listen and wait. That was a big lesson for me.
I'm glad that men are learning that, but I also have learned as a woman that I have more responsibility to bear in terms of telling a man what I want. Mm-hmm. And I developed a bit of a technique where I say to my husband, for example, "I have something I want to tell you, but I just would like you to listen. I don't want any feedback. Can you do that?"
Right.
Or
right,
I say, right, "I'm in the beginning of this, and I'll take positive feedback, but don't give me any criticism." Or
right,
I'll say, "I'm ready. Give me everything you've got." And that seems to make a huge difference. I mean, why do we need to make people guess what we want or need?
Well, yeah, and as a friend of mine once said years ago, he was actually a therapist, he said, "Advice is the lowest form of conversation." And I always thought that was, especially gratuitous advice, unsolicited advice. People don't want, you know, advice is off the top of your head. It's almost insulting if somebody shares a deep personal problem they're dealing with and you shoot from the hip and tell them something off the top of your head about what you think. That's not only has no value, it's insulting to somebody to be, and in fact, that article that I wrote about divorcing an old friend, one of the problems was this guy just couldn't stop shoveling advice on people, including me. I called him to tell him I was getting married, and instead of congratulating me, he kept yelling at me, "No, just live with her, and you know, this is a huge mistake." And I thought, whoa, I called to share my joy, and you're beating me up? I can't do this. You know, this is ridiculous. So in relationships, couples, I think the idea of advice, and especially if it's not asked for, it's insulting. If a woman or a guy says, "You know, I'm really feeling terrible. I'm struggling with my family stuff, and the last thing that person wants is advice. They want you to feel what they're feeling and say, ah, okay, I understand. I get how you're feeling. What can I do for you? That's the right response. What can I do for you? And if it's nothing, well, it's nothing. But the worst thing I think people do is, you know, go to a restaurant or go to a bar, go any place where people are being social, and all you hear is, you should, you should, you should. Everybody's telling everybody what they should do. You know, it's just nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is insulting to be sticking advice on somebody. And also, that becomes a trust issue, because if every time you tell a friend or your wife or your husband or your kids, if every time you tell them something and what they come back with is advice, they're going to stop sharing with you because they're going to realize they can't really trust you just to listen and to get on the same page they are. So I think that's mm-hmm. critical. You know, in terms of trust, it's critical not to just listen. Feel what they're feeling and ask, what can I do for you?
I really agree with you. When my son was very young, he just turned 16, he went off to college in a special circumstance, and he ran into a very intimate issue there that he called me about one day and talked with me, and I was so touched that he had shared himself so deeply with me. I said something to him about it, you know, how much I appreciated it, and he said, Mom, there's a reason that I tell you these things. Would you like to know what it is? And I said, yes. And he said, well, if just once in all the years I've been telling you stuff about myself, I'd heard so much as a, I would never have told you another thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I noticed that my son's a little older than yours. My son's 45. And I noticed that years ago, I began to notice when he was becoming a man on his own, I was still trying to tell him what to do, because when he was young, he needed more guidance. And finally, he started saying, Dad, this is my life. And I said, oh, yeah, no, you're right. I got it. And I noticed that when I gave him advice, I didn't hear from him so often. When I stopped giving him advice, I heard from him two, three times a week. He doesn't live locally. He lives in Denver now. But we became great friends, and the basis of our loving friendship is that I don't tell him what to do anymore. I don't give him advice unless he asks for it. I just support him. Most of our conversations are about him and his life, because I'm his father. That's what it's supposed to be. I mean, we're friends, but I'm still his father. And I think that's one of the places where parents today, especially of teenagers, they really screw up badly, is instead of being parents, they try to be friends. Mm-hmm. Well, the kids don't need you to be a friend. They got plenty of friends. And if they were going to pick a friend, you wouldn't be one. So you need to be a parent, which is, you know, to respect their boundaries and to make sure they're respecting your boundaries, and, you know, to give them the life's lessons that, you know, are going to help them. But I think that's critical.
I agree. Well, it seems to me a lot of women think that a man should feel safe and be able to let down within the structure of a romantic or partnership relationship. And I was interested to read how difficult that may be. Can you enlighten us a little bit about why that's difficult for many men?
Well, I think that there's for a lot of guys, opening up is a scary proposition, partially, especially with women, because, first of all, it's not a level playing field. If there's going to be an emotional conversation in a family between a husband and wife about how you're feeling, men know right away that they're at a disadvantage, because women tend to be more plugged into how they're feeling. But the hard part is that a lot of guys can't distinguish between thoughts and feelings. And if you ask 10 guys how they feel about something, you know, 8 or 9 of them are going to tell you what they think. If you say, no, I already know what you think, what do you feel? They still come back and say, I told you what I think. I mean, they really don't get the difference. But I think there's some fear, because they're not real skilled. And I always tell women, if you want men to have the emotional dialogue with you in a relationship, be patient, be calm, let them speak, you know, don't interrupt. And most important, don't judge the outcome, because if you want to hear how the guy is, your guy is feeling about your relationship, you have, a woman has to be willing to really hear what that is, and it may not be what she was hoping for, or she may be surprised to hear something she really didn't want to hear. Well, you ask how he felt, and if he tells you, you have to acknowledge that and support it. You can't judge his feelings. I always tell people that when a man talks about his feelings, that's his absolute truth. You know, his opinions may be his thoughts or his opinions. You can judge those. You can debate and argue them. But when a man tells you how he's feeling, that's his absolute truth, and you got to respect that. If you don't like what you hear, well, you can say, gee, you know, that's painful to hear. I didn't realize you were feeling that way. But what happens in a lot of relationships is that a guy finally gets, you know, screws up the courage, you know, to say how he's feeling, and then he gets dumped on for it. And I can tell you, I always tell women, that's the last time that guy will ever do that. It's the first and last conversation on an emotional level you'll ever have. So I tell women, be patient, be calm, you know, let him speak, let him wait till he's finished, and then say, okay, I heard you, I understand, I respect what you have to say, it's hard for me, you know, to hear because, whatever, but you can't put an opinion or a judgment when a guy shares how he's feeling, and that's important.
Thank you. That's great advice. One of the things that puzzled me, my husband was in a marriage for 25 years, and then his wife died, and within less than a year, he was remarried. Mm-hmm. And that marriage didn't work out, not surprisingly. But it leads to this question, and I know you have something to offer on this. Why are men so much more ready to move immediately into another relationship when the current one ends, more so than women, in my observation?
It's interesting. I've written several columns in the Huffington Post about this. They're not more ready. They're more needy. The problem is, the reason that, if you look at the statistics, men's second marriages fail at a higher rate than their first, and their third marriages fail at a higher rate than their second. And the reason is that men get real needy after a relationship, and instead of either talking it out with other guys or sitting and just with their feelings and understanding what their part of the failed relationship is, their answer is to just run out and get another relationship going. And they bring all the baggage from the old relationships with them. They haven't done any of the work associated with, you know, figuring out what their part was, what they could have done differently, what they did wrong. And they never sat with their feelings. So it's not surprising that, you know, the second, third, fourth marriages, whatever. We had a guy in the group who was on his fourth marriage, and it was a disaster. And he said, you know, I don't think I can do this again. And he was just going to sit and stay in that marriage. Well, he'd married the same woman four times.
Mm-hmm.
It was shocking. They looked alike. They acted. They were all short, blonde, aggressive women. And it was shocking. I kept meeting his wife. So I think, did I meet her before?
I'm sure I had dinner with her.
Yeah, it's just, this is so bizarre. But, you know, men, that's the problem. They don't sit with their failures. You know, they just want to keep forging ahead. Well, I'll get it right next time. No, you won't get it right next time. Not until you figure out why you didn't get it right last time. But men get real anxious. You know, as soon as they're alone, and I speak from experience, you know, this was my experience too. As soon as I was alone, boom, I needed to find another woman right away, and because that resolved the anxiety of being alone. But it didn't resolve any of the issues of why I was alone.
Mm-hmm. It's time for another break here, but I also want to talk with you for a bit about whether that's could be also sexually motivated, in that men may feel that they need to satisfy sexual needs and therefore need to go from one partner to the next, or if satisfying the sexual need demonstrates either that you're loved or you're still capable. So I want you to answer those questions when we come back from the break, please.
Sure.
We're talking today with author and speaker Ken Solin. You can find him at kensolin.com. He's the author of Act Like a Man, Don't forget to ask your questions now on the chat or call us at 800-630-7858. You are listening to Full Power Living.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Everybody feels anger, but if you don't learn to deal with it, anger can mess up your life. It can cause you relationship problems, difficulties on the job, or create health problems. If you want a way to understand and work with anger that's simple yet so powerful it helps you to put an end to the specific angers that are messing up your life, then you'll want to get a copy of a mini course I've created for you entitled Reduce Anger Now. With it, I want you to be able to figure out what's stimulating the anger you feel and have an easy way to change that anger so you can dramatically reduce the anger in your life. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, longtime psychotherapist, coach, and anger expert. I've helped thousands of people to master anger, and I want you to begin to become an anger master in your life. Order Reduce Anger Now at the store, www.emotionalpro.com. That's www.emotionalpro.com. All right, welcome back. We're here with Ken Solon talking about his experience as a leader of men's groups and about his book, Act Like a Man. So, Ken, before the break, I was asking you how much sex plays a part in men wanting or feeling the need to reconnect after one relationship breaks up.
Well, I think that the sexual pull is huge, but part of that also is that a lot of men don't know the difference between physical intimacy and emotional intimacy. I think men want emotional intimacy, but don't really know what that looks. Most men don't really know what that looks like. So, sexual intimacy passes for a relationship. One of the things I hear from men often, frequently hear from men, is, you know, I've been married for a few years and sex has become boring and, you know, I'm starting to have affairs. And I think, well, you know, I look at their marriage, I listen to them and we talk about their marriage. There's no emotional intimacy. It got boring not because the physical sex got boring. It got boring because there's no connection. And the physical sex, after a few, you know, 6 months or a year, the magic wore off and there was nothing to keep it going after that. There was no emotional intimacy to keep it going. So it's important that, you know, men understand the difference. And there was a guy in our group that when we first started who had been having affairs for decades, almost as soon as he got married, and talked about women, woman's best use was just for pleasure, and he'd never had an intelligent conversation with a woman. He was a real woman hater, and we kept pushing him and pushing him. And finally, he told his story, and his story was, you know, he was crying when he told his story. Decades before, he'd been dumped, really seriously dumped, very unceremoniously by a woman. He was supposed to marry. They were going to meet at a train station and go away for a weekend, and she never showed, and he called, and she said she never wanted to see him again. Well, I said to him, what happened? He said the pain was so bad, I felt like somebody kicked me in the belly. I had to sit in the train platform for a couple hours. I couldn't even move. And I said, so what did you do after that? And he said, I stuffed that pain so deep I knew it would never bother me again. I said, you realize the ensuing, you know, 3 decades, that pain, it absolutely governed how you feel about women. Mm-hmm. And in your marriage, as I said, it's the reason you don't respect your wife. You married on the rebound. I said, you don't respect your wife, and you don't trust your wife because of what happened to you. You never resolved that pain. And it was a huge breakthrough for him. What he chose to do with his with the information was less important than the fact that he'd had the breakthrough, and at least he understood where his dysfunctional behavior with women came from.
Right.
So, when men keep bringing their stuff from the last relationship into the next and the next, of course it doesn't work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a really, really important. You mentioned before about fear, and that sort of ties in with the story I told about the boys on the bicycle, because aren't boys taught if you're afraid, just ignore it and go ahead anyway? And the important thing for me is that fear tends to paralyze us. And in reading your book, Act Like a Man, I saw that the paralysis doesn't necessarily keep men from being successful in work, but it does more keep them from being successful in relationships, which is what I think it was the character Phil that went through that. I can't remember which one it was in your book. Anyway, you tell the story that you were just sharing. But they get paralyzed. Do you think it's the fear that's causing them to be so paralyzed?
I do. I think one of the issues, the biggest issue that stands between men becoming, really authentic friends is fear. Fear that the other guy's, better looking, taller, has a better wife, has a better job, has more money, has a bigger dick, you name it. You know, guys are afraid of each other for lots of reasons, and that's why there's no trust, because there's this huge fear. Once men can sit together, leave their egos at the door, and open up about who they really are and how they really feel, the fear goes away, because every guy realizes that all the other guys are in the same boat they are. And when you can let go of that fear, you can build trust, and all of a sudden you have a real friend. One of the things that, one of the big issues for a lot of men is they have no friends in their lives, and they're just all alone in the world. I always end my talks with a question. The next time your life falls apart, who are you going to call? Most guys, it's nobody. If you're in a men's group, you've got seven or eight guys, you can call at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they'll all be there as long as it takes them to put on their clothes and drive to your house. Mm-hmm. How many men have that in their lives? Mm-hmm. Virtually none. And that's what's missing. And once men can get past their fear of each other and learn to trust each other, and there has to be, a reason to trust, has to be confidentiality, no judgment, just support. All of a sudden, your guy's life changed. My life changed. Mm-hmm. I went from having no really close, authentic friends to having guys who do anything for me. Mm-hmm. I had probably the worst experience a father could have or a parent. My youngest son died 10 years ago, and I was just paralyzed. I made one phone call. I managed to call one guy who was in my group and also my closest friend, and he was at my house in 20 minutes, and everybody else showed up, that night, the next day, and they kept coming by for weeks to cook, to make sure I was okay. I had a place where I'd go to the meetings every other Thursday and talk about how I felt. If you don't have that in your life, then that's a tragedy, but mm-hmm. you can do something about it. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely do something about it, and that's why I think men's groups are so important.
I have to say, if there's any woman listening who wants to be inspired with the notion that men have feelings and can really be there for you, they should read that portion of your book. It's very, very touching. It must have been very difficult to go through also.
It was. And I wanted to share it because I wanted men to get in touch with what it feels like to be all alone, because every guy has that experience. You don't have to lose a child to have that experience. You can lose a job and not have anybody to call. You can, your relationship can end. You can be divorced. There's lots of things that cause men pain. Mm-hmm. And the notion that, real men just suck it up and go it alone, it's total nonsense.
Right.
Women who read my book say, one woman, I remember, shipped a review, the book's on Amazon, this woman said, It was like reality television in a book. It was the most honesty I've ever read. Well, if a woman wants to know what men really do talk about when it's just men, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of women are surprised. You know, that in all the years we've been meeting, there's never been any women bashing. There's never been any negative stuff about women. It's always about how can we be better men. And
right.
That means better fathers, better husbands, better boyfriends, even better employers.
Well, that leads me to this. I think we have about time for one more question. You've been, I first learned about men's groups 40 years ago. You've been leading them for 20 years. And I want to know, from your point of view, are we making progress? You know, you talked about how your son is able to father his son in a better, more loving way, but are we really developing or helping enough men to open up to their feelings that we're moving forward, from your point of view?
No, not at all.
In
fact, it's interesting. A couple weeks ago, I got an email from a fellow who found me through a Huffington Post interview that they did with me a while back, and he's a television producer, and he wants to shoot a men's group over a weekend and put it on Discovery Channel or History Channel, Learning Channel, one of those channels. And so I'm talking with him now because what I want is we would take men who've never done the work, put them together for a weekend, and by the end of the weekend, I think people will be astounded by the change, even in a weekend, that men can experience. On my website, there's a 40-minute documentary. We did the same thing. We took six guys who never met and put them in a room together for a day. By the end of the day, these guys really cared about each other. They wanted to keep doing it. They wanted to keep telling their stories. They wanted to keep meeting. So I think the only way men are going to get this is if it gets on television or something in a mass media where men can actually see it. Or maybe it'll be women who watch it and say, hey, you know what, you got to watch this. This is the guy in there. He's just like you. And I listen to him. I feel like I'm listening to you. And that's pretty much how it is. So hopefully we'll get this on television. It'll make a difference.
That would be wonderful. That would really be great.
Yeah.
Well, I found your book, Act Like a Man, very well written, easy to read. Your wife did a wonderful job of editing. That's great.
I'll tell her.
And yet it was packed with really easy to swallow wisdom. And so, you know, I'm glad you're telling us about the women who've read the book, too, because I think Act Like a Man is a book that both men and women can benefit from. And as a former recovered angry person myself, I really appreciate all the work that you've done on yourself and sharing, excuse me, and for sharing with all of us. Pardon me. And thank you for taking your time to be our guest here on Full Power Living today, Ken. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure for me, too. Thanks for having me.
All right. Next week, March 15th, psychologist Dr. Kirby Surprise, I love his name, talks with us about synchronicity. Join us every Thursday live at 9 a.m. Pacific or noon Eastern time for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. I want to give a shout out to Florence, who lives in England, who wrote us this week that she's been listening for years to Full Power Living shows. Thanks for listening, Florence, and for writing also. Please send your own message to us. I'd love to hear from you and where you are and how you react to Full Power Living. Paul Johnson of Fresh Talk Media is our producer and fantastic support person. He doesn't have to go to a men's group. He's really great at supporting. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you, pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.